Let's begin now.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into After Hours. Drew Nixon sitting in for Dusty Likens today. Julio on the other side of the glass. Here with you for the next few hours. We got a lot to dive into. Some Royals, a good amount of Chiefs, and also some college football. You know, whenever you have me, you're going to get some college football. Out of left field question as well coming up at 8 o'clock. Happy to have you along for the show today. The first text I see, or one of the first texts I see, you're not allowed to stand up. Get in your hole where you belong. Okay. Excuse me.
What's that referring to?
I don't know, man. Somebody said, loving your podcast so far. Thank you so much for listening. Yeah, 249 Miles of Football Podcast. It is your college football fix here at the station. KU, K-State, Missouri. We talk about it every single episode. All three locals are covered. This week was all about Kansas State. How does Kansas State win the Big 12? You can catch that wherever you listen to your podcast. Yeah, Julio in the house. Happy to have you along, Julio.
Yeah.
Second time for you and I to do the show. We're going to start out by with concerns for the Royals. Second half potential concerns. I'm not concerned necessarily because the first half was so much better than what everybody was expecting. But if the Royals were all of a sudden, with where they sit right now, well over 500, in a good spot, four players making the All-Star game, if they were to all of a sudden finish only at 500 or worse, I would say everybody should be and would be disappointed, especially given the start that they had. But what is the one thing that maybe concerns you more than anything else? For me, and somebody texts in a Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7610, I mean, plainly, you have to look at the bullpen and in a little bit of the offense. If you had to pick one, what would that be? Because that, I think, is the conversation. The bullpen, especially, they add Hunter Harvey. Bubich is going to be getting more of a presence there. Hopefully, he can stay healthy. You know, I think that's necessary for them to make the postseason. Them to upgrade there, and they have. The offense needs to help itself out a little bit, but I think the starting rotation falling off is my main concern, because if you look at what has been the output so far, the amount of guys that throw 200 innings in Major League Baseball through the years is not what it once was. You look back at 2019, there were 15 guys that threw 200 innings. 2018, 13. 2022, only 8. Last year, only 5 guys threw over 200 innings. Right now, the Royals have three players, there's three players in Major League Baseball on pace to do it, and Seth Lugo is one of them. And not to say that he can't be that he can't do it, but if he does throw 200 innings, the output of him, what he's done so far, ERA might go up a little bit. The production might go up a little bit. I mean, he's pitching some of the best that he's ever done. And it's for the Royals. Reagan's obviously has been great. Brady Singer, you need him to be a little bit more consistent. That would be my worry, I think, most is what we've seen from the offense has been a little bit of inconsistency at times. From the bullpen especially, you Royals fans know that. But from the starting rotation, that's been the rock. That's been the foundation of the group. That's been the reason why they're as good as they have been. I think that's the concern as they start falling back. You need the offense to step up. You need the bullpen to step up. But the concern is, if you get the offense and bullpen to step up, what happens to the rotation? Because they pitched maybe, not to say they did as good as they could, because they could still keep this going the rest of the year, Julio, but I'd be a little bit concerned of what got you here to this point can only last you so long, where when that starts to falter a little bit, can the offense be more consistent, particularly against inferior pitching, as somebody from the text line pointed out. You know, they'll struggle against the number one, but then against the number four, they might put up more runs, but being able to have the consistency from facing a 1-2 to a 3 and a 4, if you can get that consistently, it's going to help out your starting pitching when it backs off a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's my major concern, is certainly the offense. I think with the pickup of Harvey, I think that solidifies the bullpen. They have some pieces back there to play with. I'm okay on that front. I think they need to make another move or two to kind of solidify that offense, make it a little bit more consistent as far as the output goes. I think with the rotation, though, I agree with you in a different way, though.
Okay. Right?
I think you're more talking about the consistency and maybe coming back down to earth a little bit. My concern would be the health aspect of keeping those pitchers healthy. It's a long season. Baseball is too long.
Especially right? for Lugo. If 200 innings is a lot of innings for somebody and a lot on your arm.
Yeah. So I think keeping those arms in the rotation healthy, I think that is going to be the most challenging part. I expect them to maybe Lugo come down back to earth a little bit, the pitching overall come back down to earth a little bit, but that's why they need to make moves on the offensive side of the ball. But man, just keeping them healthy and consistent, I think that's the biggest thing right now.
Jazz Chisholm seems to be the most popular name that comes up, and I think from a guy that is able to do multiple things. He's not stuck in one position of the field. One player that I don't know why I like this player, but I do. Jerickson Profar, a guy that can do a little bit of everything. Started out his career more of an infield guy. Now he's an outfield guy. Jazz Chisholm, in a way, can be a multifaceted player, more of a utility guy that can do a bunch of different things. If he's available at the right price, I think he's an intriguing name for an upgrade when we're talking about the hitting and the playmaking outside of just, being a good defender, being, a guy that can impact the game in multiple ways. Currently, as the Royals sit 7 games back in the division, they lost 2 going into the All-Star break. They're only, for what it's worth, 2.5 games back of the Minnesota Twins, who currently hold a wild card spot. They're 2 games back of the Boston Red Sox in the wild card race. And then I think another team to keep an eye on would be the Houston Astros. They're only 1.5 games back where the Royals currently sit. I think it's going to be one of those things that goes all the way down to September where we're going to have some really meaningful games, which maybe that's good enough. If they, and Vern has said this, Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, multiple times has said this, if they fall out of contention, if there's not meaningful baseball in the last couple weeks of the season, that's going to be really disappointing. If they don't make the playoffs, but they've got meaningful baseball all the way down to the end and something just doesn't quite go right, or they need some help from somebody and they happen to win a game and the Royals are out, you can be disappointed, but also reflect on this can really boost you going forward, where if things really start to fall apart and you're not even in contention, that's where I think, the biggest, that'd be worst case scenario, in that case, Julio, is that all of a sudden we're in September, or we're on September 1st and the Royals are out of the division race completely, and they're sitting, instead of one spot behind the wild card, they're behind the Tigers, Rangers, Rays, and Astros. If something just totally implodes, and I think that would be no more action at the deadline.
Yeah.
I don't know if they... I think they make another move. I think they do.
They have to, right? I mean, they've kind of pushed their chips to the middle of the table, right, with this Harvey move. I mean, that was a pretty aggressive move. Early on, and
gave up a little bit,
right?
Yeah.
Beautiful. I think it's beautiful. They're aggressive, and I love it. The goalpost, to be fair, has moved, right? With
yes.
I mean, going into the season, right? We just wanted to see, as Royals fans, competitive baseball. But I think now everyone at this point has bought in. The goalpost has been moved. We want to see a playoff run now. I think maybe anything short of that, I don't know that I'd be disappointed should they not make the playoffs, right? I mean, again, just being competitive this year going into it.
In hindsight, yes.
But now I want to see them make the playoffs. But it's still considered a success. Should they not make the playoffs, like you said, they're competitive all the way to the very end. That being said, if they're going to be giving up the pieces that they're giving up to be aggressive, you got to make the playoffs, man. You got to make the playoffs.
913-586-7610. Somebody from the 816 texting in. Bob Nightingale of USA Today has reported that the Royals and Marlins have been talking about a Jazz Chisholm trade. They want the farm to be traded. Go all in, Royals.
What's the contract situation for him?
Do you know? I do not. I don't want to pretend like I know either. In regards to trading the farm, though, I don't. You want to have guys that you can rely on maybe for potential trades next year. And I don't want to say that you need to go all in this year, but I don't know if this is the year to go all in.
Agreed.
If you can get Jazz Chisholm, but you don't have to give up much, great. You have Jack Tani, as some people are calling him, from the Florida Gators. Maybe he has some potential to quickly go through the minors and maybe by the end of next year, when we're getting into hopefully a playoff run or a, you know, a playoff push by the Royals in 2025, a guy that can come in and help your offense right away. I don't know if it's time yet to really trade the farm. I mean, you gave up a little to get Hunter Harvey, but I do think you want to position yourself potentially for next year to go and get a, I don't want to say the Josh Chisholm is not a top tier player, but if you can find a way to land somebody who's more of a tier B guy that is that can really be beneficial and is a good bat or a really good bullpen guy or a bang on closer, not to say that MacArthur's not going to do the job, but I think a guy that can really be the one to put it away for you and you can rely on him on a consistent basis, maybe that's somebody who they go after next year. I don't know if I would say trade the farm. Well, right away, because of course there's always the risk reward whether you do it now or whether you do it later. But I don't know if this is the year to really go all in.
Yeah, and
quite yet.
I agree with that. I guess the problem with that, right, is trading away the farm. The farm is a little bare at this point, right? Having a
hard bottom, to do that already. Yeah,
right. Bottom third, you know, farm system. What do you have to give right now? So, like you said, I don't know that it's necessarily a time to completely buy in. But I do love the aggressive mentality that they've had. I think in the past, that's been an issue for them where they overvalue what they have in the farm system. Whereas I think now they kind of have more of a grip on reality of what they actually have and what they need to give up to get those pieces that they need to be successful. So,
and the best thing is surrounding Salvi, you've got younger guys that are stepping up as leaders, whether it be Vinny Pasquantino, you know, Bobby Witt, Michael Massey. We don't know what his health situation is. Hopefully he can find a way to get over the back issue and continue to be one of those guys on the field. But, you know, you've got a young nucleus of guys around Salvi who really are going to help continue to push this team forward. And I think a lot of that, as somebody texted in, JJ Piccolo has made stellar moves so far in his position. I trust him and his scouts' judgment. It's time to buy in. I think that we're bought in 100%. I mean, Dusty has talked about it, you know, hop on the boat, hop on the ferry, because it's time to do that.
It's cruise ship.
Yeah, that's right. The cruise ship. Either you're on or we're leaving. And you're going to miss out on what we got. I think JJ, to that texture's point, has done a fantastic job. And a lot of people are buying it. He's done a really good job at doing the most with what he can. And I think that's all you can ask for as a Royals fan. Up next, one NFL executive believes there's one area of Patrick Mahomes' game that he's never really improved upon. Why that makes no sense and why it actually could be the reverse of that. I'll tell you why next. It's After Hours right here on 610 Sports Radio.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
We are back on After Hours. Drew Nixon sitting in for Dusty Likens. Julio on the other side of the glass. So there's one, I couldn't believe this. Nobody's perfect. I'll start off by saying that. But Patrick Mahomes is about as close to perfect of an NFL quarterback as you would like. You know, he's got the mobility, he's got the arm strength, he's got the creativity, he's got the accuracy, he's got the leadership. I mean, basically everything. If you could build a quarterback, Patrick Mahomes has essentially everything that you would like.
Nothing I would change
in some area, way, shape, or form. Because you think, oh, I'd love Lamar Jackson's speed. Patrick Mahomes has done a really good job with his footwork in big time moments, in big time games. That would not be the case, though, if you're looking at or reading a story that came out on Casey Kingdom. Shout out to them and Joe Summers, who wrote the story on FanSided. There's one area that one NFL executive thinks Patrick Mahomes' game has never really improved on. And what's crazy is it's one of those things that I mentioned. Again, you build up Patrick Mahomes, you think of all the great runs, the Tennessee one. The ones in the Super Bowl, the one against my Cincinnati Bengals in the AFC title game a couple of years ago. You think of all of those great moments that Patrick Mahomes has delivered on the ground and just his ability to maneuver in the pocket. But Jeremy Fowler of ESPN had a number of high-ranking officials anonymously rank QBs. Mahomes was at the top, but one exec said, quote, "What's funny is he can still improve," talking about his footwork. "He's never truly improved his footwork since he's been in the league. It hasn't mattered because he's so good."
I don't know that that's true.
I don't know if they how much they've watched.
Hey, I don't know
Patrick Mahomes, but I would argue that it's almost if you flipped that, he is in such an elite category. He separated himself in that regard because Joe Burrow has had moments where he has scrambled and made plays. Lamar Jackson, we know, is a guy that can scramble and make plays with his legs, but doesn't necessarily have the intention of throwing the football in that moment. He might, you know, put his head down. He's able to make a play, and he's Lamar Jackson is good enough to do that, where it takes away from maybe the stuff that he lacks compared to Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and Joe Burrow and Tom Brady, et cetera, just down the line of guys who can throw the football. But Patrick Mahomes is considered, I think, one of the best, actually, at his position in maneuvering the pocket and making the most out of a dead play. That's where this doesn't make much sense to me. If there's one thing to work on, I don't know if it's anything outside of maybe his decision-making. And even that is a huge stretch because, you know, every now and then there were plays last year and maybe he was just trying to, you know, urge the ball. He was trying to put the ball itself into the hands of Marquez Valdes-Scantling or Mecole Hardman. He was trying to just finesse his way into just, let me give them the best chance to catch the ball instead of just being confident throwing it. Tried to force it sometimes to Kelce because he felt he didn't have confidence in other guys. Not his problem, but that might be a little bit of a knock, if anything. But to call his footwork a knock, and maybe it's because, you know, he makes off-platform throws, but
that's what makes Patrick Mahomes, though.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I would also say it's the opposite of that, in the fact that, I mean, look what they've done. I mean, that left tackle spot has essentially been more or less a revolving door. I mean, they haven't really had a staple there. I mean, it's kind of been patchworked, and he's actually made it to where it's almost an advantage now, to where he can buy those receivers extra time to get open because he's so good at navigating that pocket and buying extra time for those receivers to get open. So yes, he could always, I mean, there's always something to improve upon, but these are first world problems. And I guess if that's something you want
right.
to take away from his game as a negative or something to improve upon, okay, but
this was a reach, yeah.
It's a bit of a reach.
Well, again, he was ranked amongst all the executives. He was ranked number one overall at the quarterback position. So it feels a little like a reach. And I think, too, there's nothing more, and I like the Chiefs. I enjoy covering them, having moved to,
even being a Bengals
to
fan.
Kansas City, even being a Bengals fan. I enjoy watching Patrick Mahomes play. I can't say that for anybody else who roots for the Bengals, because there's plays. When I watch him make, the play will be dead. It's completely dead to rights. He finds a way to maneuver through a hole in the pocket or whatnot, finds a way to fake out a defender, and you just sit back and you're like, he's so good. And you come to appreciate, I think, how good he actually is. And I don't know if maybe that's an example of, in the rare moments that we sit back and we think, man, that's a really good play.
Yeah.
You kind of forget to do that. But there are times where Patrick Mahomes has made plays with his legs and has made a throw. You just wonder, how the heck did he make that throw? But also, how did he avoid the sack? And him being able to do that, obviously, you needed some footwork to do that and make those off-platform throws. And I think his baseball background plays a role in that, where
100%.
There's guys, like, you don't see Brock Purdy making sidearm throws,
right,
and literally shifting, keeping his shoulders where they're at, but shifting his feet and trying to make a throw so he can. The angle of the throw is totally different than any. It's totally unorthodox, but he can make it happen. That to me is a little bit of footwork, as well as he's able to shift his weight over and still have the arm strength to make the throw, and it can be off platform, and he makes it look as good as anybody, as if they were just standing still and had no pressure on them at all whatsoever. That's what makes, I think, Patrick Mahomes the best quarterback in the NFL to me, is being able to make the off-platform throws, being able to extend the play, along with the accuracy that we see, along with the arm strength that we see, and all the other things that people liked when he was a prospect coming out of college.
Yeah, I think maybe what they're alluding to as far as the I don't know that they're necessarily talking about the aspect of running, right? I think what they're, him running, you know, which he has been excellent at, right, and especially in the fourth quarter. He kind of saves it for the fourth quarter when he has to make plays. I think they are talking more about the off-platform kind of throws, but again, that's what makes Patrick Mahomes, that's what makes him the best in the NFL, is making those off-platform throws, those ridiculous throws that any other quarterback in the league would take a sack on, but he somehow manages to contort his body in some weird, freakish, athletic way to be able to make that play that no one else in the NFL can make. That's what makes him excellent, man.
And that's also what pisses off everybody else who watches. Yeah. Like, you can watch it and be, you could do everything perfectly.
Dead to rights. And
yep, everything perfectly. The great play call, the blitz was right, got through the offensive line. Wanya Morris or Donovan Smith whiffed on the block, or Juwan Taylor whiffed on the block. And guess what? It still didn't matter because he was able to, he's been able to make up for, and this is where I think he does also separate himself, is to that point also. With the lack of talent that he has had at the wide receiver position, a lot of people talked about Aaron Rodgers in a way in the same light, where, you know, get Aaron some help. You know, Aaron's not Superman. He's not able to, I mean, he's great, but he's not able to do it by himself, where Patrick Mahomes was able to do it. And I think that is something that is going to be interesting to follow as the rest of his career continues to go, as him being able to make other guys better. 913-586-7610, J Southland Tow Service text line. Somebody from the 785 says, talent and ability is far superior to footwork. That being said, age will catch up with him on this eventually. I think so. That's where maybe I'm even more interested to find out, is Tom Brady found a way to still be really good. I think it helped the fact that he had great offensive lines throughout his career. He didn't have, he never ran the ball much. That's what's going to hit Lamar Jackson at some point, is that in that aspect. But how does Patrick Mahomes adjust to the lack of being able to be as agile, as mobile? What are the priorities of the Chiefs at that point? Do you spend the extra money on, you know, it would be great to bring Chris Jones back, but, you know, we got to make sure we have a left tackle that can protect Patrick Mahomes because he is older, and this is in 10 years from now, because he's going to be he's only 28. That's the thing, too. It's hard to knock his game.
Well, and he's already shown the ability to adapt to really any situation. He's a veteran now, right? He's kind of been there, done that, seen what there is to see. So he doesn't necessarily need to rely on his footwork as much as maybe he would have, because he's just so, the cerebral part of his game is just, it's at such a high level. I mean, he is the best when it comes to a football mentality, and like, what can you do? He doesn't need the footwork because he's just so freaking smart when it comes to just a football mentality. What needs to go, where he needs to go, what he can pick apart in certain defenses. He's able to read those defenses now. I mean, better than he ever had. So I'm not worried about the footwork. Again, these are first world problems.
Yeah.
You just need something to pick on him for. Sure. Go ahead.
Coming up next, Andy Reid was asked yet again, what he's thinking about retirement. Are you going to retire? How much longer you have left? You'll hear from Andy Reid on that question next as After Hours continues right here on 610 Sports Radio.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
After Hours continues right here on 610 Sports Radio. Drew Nixon sitting in for Dusty Likens. Julio producing the show. So Andy Reid has been asked about this, I don't know how many times at this point, ever since Mike Florio came out with the, well, Andy Reid could be retiring and he could do this. If this happens, it could happen and this year, or it could happen next year, or maybe even the year after that, or who knows? Every single year, this might be a thing, which I think will get frustrating eventually for, if it's not already, for Chiefs fans. Tired of hearing about Andy Reid leaving. They want to push Andy Reid out because the Chiefs are winning too much. That's what you should be saying. The nobody in the league wants the Chiefs to be good anymore. So everybody's asking, when's Andy going to retire? When's Andy going to retire? Well, Diana Rossini and Chase Daniel at The Athletic have a podcast, and they talk to Andy Reid about retirement. And once again, the same thing he's basically said before is he doesn't sound like a guy that's hanging it up anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't know. I remember when my parents retired, I said, how'd you know it was time to retire? I mean, you hit 65 and then you retire. I mean, what is it? And they said, you'll just know, you'll know when it's time to go. And
have you been close? Have you been like, you know what, this is it?
Yeah, I really haven't thought about it. I mean, I enjoy doing what I'm doing. I know I'm on the bottom side of this thing and not on the top side of it. So it's coming, but I don't know when it is. And this is a great place to coach, and I've got good players, and so I'll be 71 at the end of this contract, and that seems like really old. And so we'll see where it all goes.
Yeah, I think he's Andy seems like a very much fly by the seat of my pants sort of situation regarding this retirement. I think a lot of people are like that. I'm very young in my career. I'm not even close to retiring, but thinking about it, there's not a point of, hey, when I hit 65, I'm out of here. When I hit 70, I'm out of here. When I hit whatever it is, I don't know if people, especially people in sports, when you're talking about athletes and coaches, they don't know. Travis Kelce has said, look, till the wheels fall off, he's got the contract for two more years, but he has come out and said, you know, when I can't be the guy anymore, if I'm a mid-tier tight end, if I'm like ranked 10th on a tight end list, I'm out. I don't want any part of that. A lot of people would love to be a 10th ranked tight end in the NFL, but Travis Kelce's like, nah, man, I'm done. That's when I know. Andy Reid, he loves this stuff, man. Like he is, as soon as the season is done, he takes maybe a couple weeks or a week, and then right after that, he's digging back in, meeting with the scouts. Hey, who do we like out of the college stuff? He's watching film. He's watching tape. He's still meeting with Brett Veach. And then you got the rookie mini camps. You got the OTAs. I mean, it's constant football for Andy Reid, and he loves that stuff. I mean, he nerds out every single year, and it helps him become the coach that he has become now and why he's one of the best. And I think we can appreciate that. And nobody who's a Chiefs fan wants to see Andy go. We know it's going to come eventually, but it doesn't sound like he's of the mindset of, he doesn't go back and look in the mirror at stuff. Like, he doesn't reflect very often, which gives me the vibe of that, of, yeah, you want to be successful, you can. And also, it doesn't sound like he wants to be there yet. He doesn't feel the need to sit back and say, man, let me look and appreciate all the stuff that I've been able to do. It's all, I'm looking ahead to the next practice, the next day, getting better and trying to go for that three-peat and trying to go for another Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I think you were close to the point I wanted to make on this is that, man, when you're doing something you love, why quit? And not to mention, too, yeah, you know, he's worked so hard to be the best of the best. And he has worked his entire career to get to this point where he is at the top of the mountain now. Why would he give that up? I mean,
he's fourth all time, I think, in wins. I mean, he's close to Belichick. He's close to all that. And I don't know if that matters to him, but even still, that adds to right the conversation, now. I think.
Yeah.
Why would you, when you're having fun, to your point, when you're winning football games, when you've got Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback, why would I want to stop? Why, unless it was health reasons, why would I want to be done? I mean, Andy, it looks like he's having a blast out there. I mean, he might look frustrated on the field. He might look frustrated in postgame when he's having to talk to whoever about a loss or whatnot. But after the season's done, when they win the Super Bowl, you see him, you know, on top of Chris Jones, like, we did it, man. Like that elation, like he's almost a kid in a candy store at that point where he's as serious as it comes all the way to the end of the season. And then for a brief moment in time, he enjoys it. And is excited and reflects, and then he's right back into it within the next couple of days. It's a guy that wants to. He's always grinding to.
It's his life
to be great. Yeah,
I mean that the football is literally his life. Like, why would he give that up? He is going to ride this thing till the wheels fall off. And this, you know what this kind of reminds me of? This feels like the whole like Tom Brady thing where he's going to retire this year. He's going to retire. We heard that for like 10 years about Tom Brady retiring, and then all of a sudden he just, I'm done. That kind of is the feel that I get for this. I think we can maybe talk next year if they three-peat. Maybe he goes out on top kind of thing. But even then, again, this is his livelihood. This is what he's known for. This is what he's worked so hard for. Even after a three-peat, I don't know that he would want to give that up. Hey, let's go for four.
Yeah. I don't know. Somebody texted in from the 816. More than any coach I've ever seen, he just looks like the dad of the team. And everyone loves and respects him. I mean, they call him Big Red. It's, I mean, they have, and not that other teams don't have this, but I think that Andy Reid is a lot like, they're very different, but he's a lot like Nick Saban in a way of people love to play for him. They know what they're getting into. They know that training camp is going to be one of the toughest of any coach, if not the toughest in the NFL. They know that they're going to have to work extremely hard to get what they want, but they know that while Andy Reid loves them as people and as players, when it's time to go to work, it's time to go to work, and Andy wants the best for them. That's what I think anybody, like Luis Riz-Zamita talked about it, and we're going to get to him a little bit later on in the show. he had options for other teams. He wanted to come to the Kansas City Chiefs and play because he knew the coaching staff, he knew the structure, he knew the culture. Andy Reid's a guy that players want to play for, not only because they win, but because he's a coach that's going to make sure that they get the best out of you as a person and as a player, and a lot like what Nick Saban was. It's not easy to play for Andy Reid, I bet. But knowing on the other side, you're going to be the best football player that you could have been with Andy Reid as your coach, that's all you want. And I think that that's one of the things to that person's point who texted in. They're the respect factor. They know that he cares for them and looks out for them and wants the best, and he's going to get the best out of them. Where if you buy into it, I mean,
you're going to be successful. I mean, he's a player's coach, right? I mean, there's a reason why all those players have nothing but great things to say about Andy Reid. And you know, right, one, he has the track record, the successful track record, right? You know that what he says, he knows what he's talking about, right? He's got the rings to prove it. And you know that when he's getting in your butt, that it's for a good reason, right? It's out of love. It's out of wanting to make you better, wanting to make the team successful. He's not just yelling at you or getting in you just for the sake of getting in you. He knows what he's doing, and he wants to bring out the best in you, and that players listen and players love that whole dynamic that he brings of like that father figure kind of thing.
Somebody phrased it, I think, very well. When you're having fun, you never work a day in your life. Yep. You know,
it's not work for him, man. That's his life. This is his life.
I think too that, you know, it's being able to do the little stuff to get to that point is very important. You know, for Andy, I think that's another thing for his, like in terms of the coaching tree or where he got, well, like how he got to where he got through. And that'll be, maybe he has the evolution post coaching career where he might open up a little bit more. There's a documentary about Andy, like there's the a Football Life documentaries that the NFL Network has done forever. When Andy Reid has one of those documentaries, he's going to really become a more of a fan favorite, I think, than ever before for people league wide who don't really get to appreciate him as much here in Kansas City, just because they'll realize the stories that he has, the way that he treated his players, the way that he motivated players and all of that stuff. You just look and it's like, dude, he's a legend. Like
he's perfected the recipe.
It's easy to reflect on it afterwards, but realizing it in the moment is really hard. Like he is a legendary head coach. He is one of the best, and he's still, Bill Belichick faded a little bit at the end. Andy Reid's not fading, and I know he's got Patrick Mahomes, but
he proved it before Patrick Mahomes, whereas Belichick didn't have
wherever
that.
Andy's been, right? He has won, and that's something that you cannot take away from it, from Andy Reid, and the fact that, as you mentioned, you know, players love him, and they love to play for Andy Reid. Up next, one school that might like to play actually in the Big 12 is Florida State. They would like to be in the SEC, but after comments from Greg Sankey, I don't know if that's going to be happening. I'll tell you why, and why the Big 12 should be welcoming to schools like Florida State and maybe even Clemson as well on the other side of this break. It's After Hours on 610 Sports Radio.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
We are back here on After Hours, wrapping up the first hour. Drew Nixon sitting in for Dusty Likens. Julio on the other side of the glass. So this is news that isn't necessarily the newest, I guess. It's been in the rumblings the last week or so, but there continues to be more and more that comes of the situation. Florida State ending up in the SEC era, is this possible? Or the Big Ten? Or is it the Big 12? There actually might be a really good chance that they end up in the Big 12 if they do go anywhere. Brett McMurphy, among others, reported that Florida State would have a no from the Big Ten and the SEC if they decided to leave the ACC and the conference still stayed intact. So if FSU forced its way out of the ACC and was like, look, deuces, we're out of here, we're done, the Big Ten, but the ACC still held its own, then the Big Ten and the SEC wouldn't be interested. Greg Sankey has come out and said, look, we're focused on our 16. The Big Ten has said about what Florida State's doing, per Matt Hayes, who is a reporter, covers college football, quote, I don't know who's advising them right now, but they're doing themselves a disservice. there's that conversation of they're trying to force their way out, and the fact that they're doing it, it looks bad for the Big Ten and the SEC, because who's to say they're not going to do it again? Granted, the ACC is not on the same level at all of the Big Ten or the SEC, and I think the Big 12 is the third best conference in the country over the ACC. But the Big 12 should welcome them in with open arms. Texas. They lose Oklahoma. Texas, the biggest brand in the conference. A huge brand. Massive for, I think, just college sports in general because it's Texas. Not that it means more. That's the phrase of the SEC. But it means a lot to have a brand that is as popular as Texas is. Florida State, not quite to that caliber. But Florida State is a really big brand. I think they would come in to the Big 12 and be the biggest brand in the conference because they have national titles in football. Football carries more weight than college basketball does, whether you like it or not. Sorry, it does. KU is getting better. K-State has been really solid. But in terms of the aura that Florida State has, and if they added Clemson too, they have aura from a college football perspective that's national attention. K-State's got a lot of Big 12 attention. National attention, not so much. You know, they played Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. They won the Big 12. They got beat pretty badly by Alabama. Nobody's saying K-State can go and win the national title. People think they could win the Big 12 and make it to the college football playoff, but nobody's talking about them making a serious run. Where last year, Texas, representing, yes, it was the Big 12, made a serious run. Florida State can make a serious run. They've got the brand. They bring that attention along with them. I think that's why the Big 12 should welcome them. It's going to enhance the revenue that comes in to the conference. It's going to help make sure that the conference is solidified. And I think it just also gives Kansas State and Kansas more of a foot to stand on if they do win the conference. Like if they have to go through Florida State or if they have to go through Clemson, it adds weight to how good the conference actually is. So when we're talking about the conversation of should a 10-2 KU team get in, well, this year their schedule is really light compared to another school in the SEC that might have a tougher schedule and they go 10-2, that other team's going to get the nod and not KU. Where if you know, hey, we lost to FSU, but we held them tight. FSU won the conference. They're in the playoff. We should be in there as well. We went toe-to-toe with them. Your case for making the playoff, I think, starts to increase a little bit. And that, in the end, I think is what you want to have happen if you're Kansas and Kansas State from a football perspective, is you want to be able to make the dance outside of just being able to make the college football playoff. It gives you more options in terms of national attention. And I think Florida State and Clemson would be able to do that. Julio, I know you can't really compare it to the NFL it's hard to, because college football is so different and there's so much disparity between teams. But getting a national brand back in your conference, I think would be a really big deal, especially financially.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, with the way things have gone with college sports over the last, let's say, 10 years, I'm just going to say this. I don't believe a damn word that the SEC or the Big Ten have to say about not wanting Florida State. Like, yeah, again, you might as well just think the exact opposite of what they say, because that's pretty much the track record that these conferences have shown. And yes, they may not want Florida State right now, but like you said, if it's a Florida State packaged with a Clemson or a Miami or something like that, you don't think they're going to want those brands, that cachet, to come into their conferences? I have a hard time believing that they're not going to accept a package of something like that. Yes, they may not want just Florida State, and then they're dealing with the whole odd number 17, you know, team situation.
Yep.
I don't believe that they wouldn't take Florida State, though, packaged with some other name brand school.
If you're
the ACC, there's no way.
If you're the SEC, I think it makes sense for you to go. If you do go after more schools,
it's in the region.
It makes sense to go after Florida State and Clemson, I think, or Miami in terms of brand, area, region, etc. If you're the Big 12, if you can find a way to land, because Brett Yormark has been open again and saying, "Hey, we're open for business, guys. Like, look, like we're still technically open. If you want to come and join the party, then come join the party." That I think is appealing. Because if you're Florida State, I know you would want to join the SEC, but I think it's only from a money perspective. Because competitively, it's not like the Big 12 doesn't get a spot in the dance. It's not like they're on the outside looking in and you have to hope that somebody gets it. If you win the Big 12 conference, you're in the playoff and you get a top four, you get a bye. So that's where I think they're maybe a little bit more appealing for a Clemson, or especially if we're talking, if the ACC does go away, Louisville, NC State, a school, you know, those two schools, I think in particular, because they fit the academic profile of the Big 12 and all that stuff, it makes sense where North Carolina, Duke, Virginia would go to the Big 10, I think, in a heartbeat because they're part of a special group of universities, the American Accredited Universities, which academically they have a huge impact in, and they have a big reliance on their members of the conference. Another thing of this, too, you mentioned, I don't trust the SEC or the Big 10. One of the things that was notable, according to sources that Brett McMurphy also reported, was one of the reasons SEC and Big Ten don't want to expand is they FSU have been a disruptive partner, and they mentioned particularly wanting to leave for that, and more importantly, I think going back to last year where
we're not talking about Texas here. Well, the SEC.
I was gonna say Texas. Hey guys, you did steal
disruptive.
Overnight. We found out that you were gonna steal Texas and Oklahoma. But also, I think one of the things they're referencing is, look, Florida State was complaining and whining that they weren't making the playoff last year. Look, if Alabama, people were complaining. Greg Sankey didn't quite do it as much as Florida State did. He said Georgia belongs in the playoff. And he doesn't know what they're doing if Georgia wasn't in the playoff. Like, he was also vying for his guys. Like, I think that they weren't disruptive, but he was vouching for the conference where they all were healthy, but you lost in the conference title game to Alabama, and Alabama had not gone undefeated. I think Florida State did go undefeated. They had a case, and I understand why they were irritated. Florida State maybe pushed the buttons a little bit too far, but if you're Greg Sankey, don't point fingers at everybody else when you're also very much so guilty of doing the exact same thing, particularly with Texas. And again, who's to say they wouldn't do it to the ACC either? With maybe they don't go out of FSU, maybe they don't go to FSU out of spite, but all of a sudden, if it's next year in December, 2025 in December, and we realize we wake up one morning and see Clemson and Miami are going to the SEC, you did it again. And I think, again, the schools would love nothing more than to go to the SEC and the Big Ten. That's where you want to go because you're solidifying yourself in a conference that's never going to go away. The TV revenue is so much better than the situation that you're probably in. But would you rather have that, or would you rather be in a spot where you can still contend for a national title, still get a spot in a national title and run the conference and be one of the top dogs in the conference? That's why I think the Big 12 is so appealing, and the Big 12 should welcome it, even Kansas and Kansas State. Because again, while they wouldn't be the face of the conference anymore necessarily, you have more of an opportunity to make a case of, hey, we deserve to be in the playoff, even though we weren't conference champions. Even though we lost in the conference title game, we deserve to be in, and here are the reasons why. It provides way more of a case, I think, to be in the college football playoff. On the other side, ESPN ranked the top 100 athletes of this century, so from 2000 on. Patrick Mahomes will tell you where he's at. Could he be any higher, or should he be any higher? And it's a good debate topic, these lists. Everybody loves lists. We're going to dive into that next right here on After Hours on 610 Sports Radio.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.